the Atom Aircraft bankruptcy. What went wrong? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest today is Rob Finfrock, who is ANN's managing editor. We're here to talk about what has become of Atom Aircraft. The company suspended operations on February 11th and then announced a few days later that it was filing bankruptcy under Chapter 7. Rob, thanks very much for taking some time out for our listeners today.
Thank you, Paul.
I guess the first place I have to start is by noticing that the question of what went wrong is a pretty big, multifaceted question. Let's talk about what was supposed to go right that didn't. I think that's a better way to approach this. What was Atom Aircraft trying to accomplish with these two aircraft designs, and where did they go wrong?
Well, Paul, that's a very wide-ranging question, but let's start at the very beginning, and just as Atom did, let's start with the company's A500 inline piston twin. In 1998, Rick Atom had the idea to bring to market an airplane that at the time, and to this day as a matter of fact, wasn't offered in the general aviation market, a pressurized cabin-class piston twin that also benefited from having a push-pull configuration of its two piston engines. Instead of having two engines, one each on the wings, and dealing with the adverse yaw situation created if you have an engine-out scenario, Atom opted to go with the route that Cessna popularized starting in the late 60s with the 337 Skymaster. Inline twin, you have very few control issues to deal with in case you have an engine out. It's an inherently safer design. Atom commissioned Burt Rutan, who came up with what's called the M309 prototype, which essentially looks for all the world, on the outside anyway, like a production spec A500. A large cabin class aircraft, push-pull engines, Lycoming IO550, I believe, at either end of the fuselage, mm-hmm. and in order to accommodate that rear pusher engine, a very novel twin-boom tail, a very large tail, too, as it would turn out. Essentially, the forward half of the aircraft was all fuselage right at the wing. The design split, and the entire rear of the aircraft was comprised of this boom tail. Also, a significant advancement, the A500 was also one of the first large cabin-class aircraft to sport an all-composite design and structure. Of course, Rutan had pioneered this technology, starting with the Beech Starship. Unfortunately, time would prove the A500 to, in some respects, be a little too close to comfort to the Starship when it came out to market success, and we'll talk about that a little later. It was a very novel aircraft, though, and initially the aviation industry responded very favorably. You had the owner-operator segment that essentially, you're talking about a lower-time pilot, or a lot of time in aircraft, but not so much in twin-engine aircraft. You're dealing with a segment that would find it hard to be insured on an aircraft such as a Piper Seneca or mm-hmm. a Baron, and the idea of an inline twin-engine airplane definitely appealed to this segment because, essentially, insurance companies looked on this design much more favorably than a conventional twin-engine aircraft.
Well, and the thing is, too, that could also have been part of its undoing, because if you learn to fly in a centerline piston twin, you will be issued an operating certificate that's for multi-engine, but with an asterisk that only allows you to fly centerline thrust.
Exactly.
And so it's not like this was going to be a big step up or money-saving thing for people in the training cycle. This was going to be pretty much an end-user airplane for people who were never going to fly enough to master the conventional twin-engine arrangement.
Well, that's very true. And essentially, from the start, Atom was looking at a specific niche with the A500. Definitely, they pushed the safety advantages of the inline design. It's also a fairly large aircraft, and that is of benefit to cabin room. It is a aircraft with enough room inside to handle six full-size people. Unfortunately, weight issues would typically preclude an operator from filling even, you know, a little more than half those seats if you had an appreciable fuel load. But also, the safety aspect and the innovative aspect of the design is initially what got Atom orders for the A500. Now, I said earlier, this was in 1998. At that time, Adam expected the aircraft to enter into service sometime in 2003. As history showed, that did not happen. The company did not earn even a rudimentary type certificate for the A500 until 2005, and at that time, the company took an awful lot of flack in the marketplace for the fact that it advertised the A500 as FAA certified. Technically, that was true, but it was a very limited certification. Pilots could not fly the A500 above 12,500 feet MSL. They could not fly with more than two other people on board, and those two people had to be in specific areas of the cabin. They could not have baggage. They could only have a light fuel load on board, and it was all-day VFR, no clouds, no night operation. That was enough to get the plane in the air. It was enough to get the first aircraft delivered. But at the time, it was obviously still very much a work in progress. That showed not only in the certification, but also in the fit and finish of the aircraft. The early aircraft in particular were pretty rough around the edges. It still showed that Adam was a development company and they hadn't transitioned to that production.
Now, they sold a reported 7 copies of the aircraft and had some additional standing orders for it. Were these customers essentially, I mean, if I look down the list of people that I can see who bought the plane, it almost looks like a who's who of people who stood to benefit if the industry succeeded. In other words, there seemed to almost be an economic development aspect to the optimism expressed by these original customers.
I think optimism sums that up nicely. The A500 order book, I don't believe, materialized in the way that Adam intended. When the company started out, the A500 was to be its bread and butter product. However, as time went on, that proved not to be the case. And in a sense, the A500 in particular was an aircraft that was a little outside its time. The idea of the A500 came at a great time in 1998. One could argue, and of course the eyeglasses of history always give you 20/20 vision,
right.
But had the aircraft been able to enter service in 2003, no doubt it would have had a much more significant impact on the marketplace than it turned out to. Unfortunately, there were a lot of disadvantages to the A500 design as well. For starters, I mentioned earlier, it was a fairly heavy aircraft with full fuel. An A500 would only allow you about 500 pounds of payload, and that included a 30-gallon unusable fuel load spread out on the wings. These are very long, slender wings.
Mm-hmm.
Fuel at the edges at the time the plane finally received its essentially full certification towards the middle of last year. They finally won night approval, got the IFR approval. They approved it for air conditioning, pressurized operation. Once it was finally a fully capable aircraft, owners still realized that, hey, wait a minute, I'm dragging around essentially a light person, the equivalent of a light person, in unusable fuel, because Adam at that point hadn't been able to win the FAA's approval for, you know, basically being able to draw into that fuel in all modes of flight.
Mm-hmm.
The concern was if, in case of uncoordinated flight, the fuel out near the edges of the wings wouldn't be able to be drawn into either engine.
Actually, Rob, 30 gallons of unusable fuel at 6 pounds per gallon is an FAA standard person.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's very true, and of course none of us are standard today. Well, maybe you are, Paul, but I'm certainly not.
No, I guess your point stands that it was a light person, but continue.
The safety first aspect of the aircraft proved to be something of a blessing and a curse. I mentioned earlier it was a fairly heavy aircraft. Composite technology has yet to really yield the weight savings that is touted every time somebody brings to market a composite-bodied aircraft. You could make the point that right now, at current technology levels anyway, composite technology makes a lot of sense the smaller the aircraft that you're talking about. It works great on a Cirrus SR series. It works great on a now Cessna 350 or 400. Getting to larger aircraft, you're still dealing with a fairly problematic technology, and unfortunately, it's still a fairly heavy technology. I'll put an asterisk of my own there. Of course, there's currently an aircraft that Boeing is hoping to bring to market very soon, the 787 Dreamliner.
Which did come in over its weight budget.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the current weight figures have yet to be finalized, but as of last year, and this was at the time that the company still expected to fly the first 787 by the end of last year, there was about a 1 to 1.5% overweight penalty on the design. Boeing hasn't released its final figures yet. It'll be interesting to see what comes of that. And of course, the issues that Boeing has had with actually assembling the first large scale, the largest scale composite bodied aircraft in existence to this point, we've also written about extensively. So it was a somewhat problematic design.
Essentially, what Adam came up with the A500 was an update on the concept of the Cessna Skymaster, which there has to be a reason that it was no longer in production.
Well, keep in mind that Cessna did have a fair amount of success with the Skymaster, even though it has somewhat of the reputation as being one of Cessna's less popular designs. The aircraft saw extensive military operations. It's also worth noting that Cessna continued to build the 337 into the early 1980s, and they built approximately 2,000 of them. So maybe not by Cessna's usual standards of success, but I don't think it would be fair to call the 337 a failure. So the design itself had some merit.
My guest is ANN's managing editor Rob Finfrock, and we're talking today about Adam Aircraft's bankruptcy, Chapter 7 declared last Friday. We'll be back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Platt. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR22 GTS, Cirrus's premium luxury ride that has come to define Cirrus aircraft as one of the world's elite. Every dream option from supple leather seats to an exhilarating 310 horsepower performance and speed come standard, giving new meaning to the phrase fully loaded. When flying the SR22 GTS, getting there is truly more than half the fun. To learn more, call 888-750-9000 9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. Clarity Aloft headsets employ patented Comply Canal tips, composed of soft viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. More than simple earplugs, these foam tips provide full-spectrum noise reduction and outstanding attenuation. This advanced technology is lab-tested, proving that viscoelastic passive noise reduction is superior to active noise reduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Platt, talking today with Rob Finfrock, ANN's managing editor who watches these stories come by and just as a matter of course in his job ends up getting a lot of background on some of the stories that we hear about in aviation news. Rob, let's talk a little bit about the transition from the A500 piston twin to the A700 twin-engine very light jet.
Adam ran into difficulty, I think, is that right around the first part, once we turned the year 2000, an emerging segment came into being, the very light jet segment. Adam had one of the first true entries into that segment, the A700. I'm not sure if the A700 design was on the planning books when the A500 was conceived, but Adam very quickly saw what at the time looked to be a very strong potential market for light jets. They took the basic A500 design, as a matter of fact, most of the fuselage, the wing, the twin boom tail, and adapted it to the A700. The company announced the A700 VLJ in 2002. They made a splash the following year at AirVenture 2003 by actually flying the test A700 into the show and had it on display at Whitman Field. One of the reasons they were able to do that so quickly is, again, they essentially adapted the A500 fuselage to the A700. They put a pair of Williams turbofans on either side of that fuselage, put a nose cone on the front of it. Essentially, you had an A700. One could argue that maybe the 700 was the aircraft that Adam should have had from the beginning. It's an unfair argument, but the truth is, as time went on and as the company adapted and developed over time, the A700 very quickly proved to be the sales leader. I think at the high point, Adam claimed about 500 orders between the two aircraft. Mm-hmm. 4/5 of those were for the A700, and that included some rather large orders from air taxi operations.
Well, I think I have to observe, though, that if you're going to come out with a twin-engine, very light jet, it was an economic decision probably to make use of the existing structure of the A500, but there's really no reason to go with twin booms and that novel tail structure if you're going to do a conventional twin-engine jet.
You hit the nail on the head, Paul. They were saddled with the design that had been optimized for a push-pull piston twin. Again, you're dealing with a lot of unnecessary complexity, a lot of unnecessary weight. But initially, Adam did have a very strong order book for the A700, and they could claim a number of firsts over the development of the aircraft. Mm-hmm. Again, the first VLJ flying close to a production configuration is Adam's milestone to mark in the history books. Eclipse beat them to it as far as flying an aircraft, but the aircraft that Eclipse flew back in 2002 was with the Williams engines that subsequently they tossed out. Unfortunately, from that time where they introduced the plane in the plane made its first public display in 2003, until today, not a lot of measurable progress had been noted on the A700. As time went on with Adam, there were whispers in the aviation community of potential problems. The company made significant progress last year. They flew the first A700 that was fully conforming to the production specs that would be submitted to the FAA for type certification. That was in April 2007, I believe, and then a second aircraft followed in September. That's appreciable progress in the program, but it's noteworthy that it came 5 years after the aircraft was actually introduced. The company in 2005 also lost one of its larger orders for the A700, PogoJet, an emerging air taxi operator, swapped its rumored order for A700s to the Eclipse 500. I believe that order is still on the books for Eclipse. Mm-hmm. And at one point, and this is another area that Adam took some flack in the aviation industry, because the A700 was so closely tied to the A500, Adam at one point had tried to float the idea past the FAA of actually putting the 700 on the A500's type certificate. Mm-hmm. The FAA tossed that idea out pretty quickly. It was an interesting idea.
Right.
Unfortunately, the FAA doesn't want to put a jet on the same TC as a piston-powered aircraft, so they had to go through the entire certification process.
Well, Rob, I guess the question that comes up now is, given the issues that faced these two aircraft, especially the 500, is there going to be anybody showing up for even pennies on the dollar in bankruptcy court who wants the type certificate?
It will be interesting to see. At this point, Paul, I wouldn't want to hazard a guess, especially since usually my best speculation is usually 180 degrees off the mark on issues like this. I will say this. Adam has a lot of technology tied into the program. It has a lot of manufacturing equipment set up, a lot of tooling. They produced many of the components for the aircraft. There wasn't a great amount of outsourcing on the aircraft. At one point, Adam was even designing its own seats for the plane. There's definitely some worth in that equipment and in that design. I'm not certain that we'll ever see an A500 wearing another aircraft manufacturer's badge or label. I doubt we'll see an A700. Of course, again, I'm willing to be wrong on that, and frankly, I hope I am. They're a pair of very distinctive aircraft designs. They'll be mistaken for no other aircraft on the ramp. Unfortunately, I think history will look upon the A500 and A700 in a similar fashion to how we look upon the Starship, another Burt Rutan design, very innovative. Of course, the Starship, manufactured by Beechcraft and later Raytheon, was powered by a pair of pusher-mounted Pratt & Whitney PT-6 turbofans. That aircraft, again, was outside of its time. I'm not sure it could be argued it came too soon or too late. It was too heavy, and that's what eventually ended production for Raytheon more than anything else on the Starship, was the fact that it, again, offered fairly limited utility for its design. What it did do, it did very, very well, but in the end, it faced a marketing problem.
Well, Rob, I think obviously watching what's happened to other bankrupt manufacturers in the near past, I think we're very likely to see Cessna come into court and bid for it and call it the 337A.
And, Paul, I would venture a guess that several other Cessna competitors would be more than happy to watch them do that.
Rob, I was just trying to provide a baseline so that your predictions look right on. Rob, all joking aside, I have to think that with the aerospace industry going through the problems it has right now, finding enough qualified people to work in the industry, that at least the folks who worked for Adam Aircraft will have some prospects.
One would certainly hope, Paul. And again, if there's ever a right time for something like this to happen, I would argue that it is now the time, because those workers should be able to find other jobs. Probably won't find them around Ogden or Denver, however, but they will be found.
Rob, we appreciate your background on this story, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Paul.
Rob Finfrock is ANN's managing editor, and you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.